Hi, and welcome back to Gray Area. I'm Krista Rodriguez, and today I'm so excited to be joined by rising producer and fellow Southern California boy, Abo. Abo has been lighting up dance floors and social media with his dark and funky tech house. Abo, how are you? What's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Where in the world are you tuning in from today?
Anaheim, California, and it's very cloudy.
Born and raised.
I've actually lived 5-6 different cities around Orange County, but around this area. But yeah, I grew up mostly from Anaheim and then Lake Forest as well.
Okay. I grew up in Cerrito. So like just on the border of LA and Orange County, but you know, just slightly on the other side.
It's pretty close from where I am right now. Yeah.
So I feel like for people who are not familiar or who don't live in Orange County, their major pop culture references are like TV shows like The OC or Laguna Beach. What is your version of The OC living, you know, having lived there all your life?
I would say it's very relaxed, very kind of surfer kind of style. A lot of people listen to like, I mean, when I was growing up, like it was a lot of ska and like Gwen Stefani, No Doubt. That was when I was a kid, but it's very laid back, relaxed. I got the beach 20 minutes away from here. Yeah, I would just say it's very laid back. Everyone's pretty chill here compared to LA, where everyone's kind of go, get it, kind of uptight. But it's been a very relaxed county. I'm grateful to be growing up here. It's been good.
So let's go all the way back to the beginning. What were some of your earliest music memories growing up?
Oof. My first one easily was Outkast. My dad would play a lot of Outkast in the car. And this one song called B.O.B. by Outkast. I remember as a kid, it was like my first memory of a song. And it just made me so hype. And I always would go nuts in the car. And I probably played it. I made my dad play it back to me at least hundreds of times as a kid, as well as Chemical Brothers, which really got me into house music, specifically Do It Again. That one, that song really got me into house as like a very young kid. But yeah, I would say those are my main influences, Outkast and Chemical Brothers. It's really what I grew up on.
Were they both introduced to you by your dad?
Yeah, my mom listened to a lot of pop, like Kiss FM and I don't know, just kind of pop in general. So I kind of have a mixture of both I got, but there's a lot of hip hop from my dad and Radiohead also being the third one I was most influenced by. But yeah, my dad would be the one showing me like really new stuff I've never heard before instead of like kind of the stuff on the radio. But yeah, it was mainly my dad influenced me and my music taste quite a bit.
Okay. Papa Abo had taste. We love it. Mm-hmm. I've read in interviews that you've also kind of looked to, you know, Daft Punk in terms of your electronic music.
Influence. Oh yeah. I forgot about them. Yeah. Okay. So it was Chemical Brothers and Daft Punk. Those are the two big artists I would say that got me the most, influenced when it comes to my sound right now and just being into electronic. That was like the first two stepping stones I had. But yeah, Daft Punk, and they got like, I would say the funk that I have in my music is definitely from them. They have the perfect balance of funk and electronic music. But yeah, I'd say Daft Punk, I'm fully influenced by them. I would say it's like half of my sound is Daft Punk influenced for sure.
From what I've read about you, you started out playing the drums pretty early and you even joined your high school's drum line.
Yep.
What compelled you to move solely beyond, you know, just listening to music and starting to play it for yourself?
So the game Rock Band, do you remember that game? That game is really what got me into like playing drums and actually realizing that I could just bang on stuff and make music. Music is kind of cool. Maybe I should make it because I'm so obsessed with it as a kid. Because I would spend like half the day listening to my iPod shuffle to music, and I wouldn't even hang out with friends. There's one period of time in my life where I'm like, I'm so addicted to music. It's crazy. And then my parents got me Rock Band to realize my addiction to music. And I started playing drums. I quickly got really good at drums on Rock Band. I started playing expert level. And my mom was like, we need to put them in like guitar lessons or something. And this was like third, second grade when I was just going crazy on Rock Band drums. And then to me, the four drums basically was like the tenor drums and drumline. And I saw the tryouts and they had that same exact layout with the four drums. And I'm like, oh, that's just like Rock Band. I want to bang on those drums and I want to play them and get PE credit as well. Cause I wasn't really into a lot of sports. So I would say Rock Band was easily the reason why I got into Drumline, and then it just completely segued into making music and playing instruments, stuff like that. So yeah, it was literally from a game.
So from drumming, how did you transition into music production?
It was actually me getting into DJing because I was in this student government body in high school, and we needed people to play music during snack and lunch, and we had these dodgeball tournaments. And I was thinking to myself, we have some money for ASB that we could probably just write off and get like a DJ deck or a sound system. So we convinced our director to buy a nice sound system. I was thinking to myself, I can just buy a $150 DJ deck and just learn on YouTube. And I bought it. And then within a day, I just figured out kind of how to mix very poorly. But I brought the deck when I was in high school, and I would just DJ during our dodgeball tournaments and during snack and lunch. And to me, it was just kind of like a joke. It'd be just kind of cool to see someone DJing during snack and lunch, but it segued into an addiction, honestly. Like, it literally wasn't my passion. Like, I didn't want to DJ. I just thought, like, why not just buy a deck just to play music, because someone needed to play music and I was tired of playing it through my phone. So I'm like, why not DJ? It'd be kind of fun. And then it just became an addiction. And then sooner or later, I DJed house parties in high school. And then from DJing, I realized there's so much electronic music, so many genres in specifically house. And then I slowly started getting to that rabbit hole where I couldn't believe how many genres there were. I'm like, what? And then, yeah, just DJing then got me into house music. And then I saw Chris Lake specifically, that really got me into making music live. And then, yeah, it was basically from DJing, realizing how much dope music there is specifically in house music and how fun it is to mix. And then started making music after that, downloaded Ableton and just kind of learned all off YouTube. And the rest is history. And I was locked in for 6 years doing it. And now we're slowly here.
So take me back to one of those like campus lunches when you were DJing, just for your fellow students. What kind of music, you know, was on deck?
Oh man, it was all genres. It wasn't just house. It was like crazy trap music. Moombahtone I really liked when I started DJing. Moombahtone was a big influence. A lot of Dylan Francis, what I have to say. A lot of bass house, like from Spin Records, stuff like that, like Big Room, Tiesto stuff. It was almost everything. Every like big EDM kind of genre that was like loud sounding and just crazy sounding. I would say those genres. A lot of trap music, actually. It's a lot of trap music. And also, I actually made bass and trap music when I first started producing. I didn't even make house because I was just like so into that heavy hitting bass and just kind of hip hop kind of elements of trap, because I was so influenced by hip hop growing up. Trap was honestly my first love, and then slowly gone to house. But yeah, it was all over the place. I was DJing every genre, basically, even pop music, stuff like that. Very open floor format.
And what was the overall reaction from your peers?
Oh man. I mean, my friends like hyped me up, but no one really cared. I was just kind of like, everyone's eating lunch, hanging out. I was just DJing on the side. I feel like a lot of people didn't even know I was DJing until you really looked at me, because I was just in the middle of this courtyard with like 1,000 people all around just doing their own thing. I feel like a lot of people didn't notice, but I was DJing. During the dodgeball tournaments, it was hype when I was playing some like pegboard nerds and like heavy trap glitch hop stuff. That's when people kind of noticed, but I was a background DJ, basically. I wasn't looking for attention. I was just kind of help setting the vibe, basically. But my peers did like it, though. My peers were supportive.
It seems like it was a bit of a humbling experience, which is necessary for DJs. You know, you got to learn how to play to the small crowds,
yeah, before definitely.
You can build up to the big ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not know what I was doing. I did not mix well at all either. So, yeah, it was a learning experience for sure.
So you mentioned being partly influenced by Chris Lake. What specifically about, you know, seeing him inspired you?
I would just say hearing the music live and feeling the bass line, because I didn't really go to a lot of concerts growing up. I maybe went to like two or three as a high school student. And then Chris Lake was like my first big introduction to a live setting, like a house music in a live setting. And then feeling the bass line live, it made me fall in love basically like instantly, and making me want to make house music from now and here on out. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's just like that live sensation of feeling a bass line and feeling the music a lot more than you would in headphones or in a car is really what got me to fall in love. And also his bass lines are so funky and unreal in a live setting. I don't know. Something about the feeling where you just feel it right in your chest and moving up and down. That's just what got me to fall in love with house music and being addicted to bass lines in general.
Absolutely. So like you said, you started out at first making like trap and bass music inspired by your love of hip hop. What was kind of the initial, you know, vision going into your early music?
I did not have a vision at all. I was just making music of what I thought was kind of cool, but I just kind of was winging it. I was still in college at the time. To me, it was kind of like a hobby. Like, I felt myself getting better and better at it. I'm like, oh, this could be fun. But then when I made that pivotal change to house music, that's when I'm like, all right, I'm going to try to do this full time. I'm going to attempt to do this full time. But the vision at first was there was no vision. I was completely winging it. I was just making music because it was kind of a fun hobby. And then it slowly turned into an addiction, especially when I started making house music and how fun it was. And then people reacting to it. And then I got more support. And that's when I slowly started to have a vision to switch to this ABO project that I've been thinking about for years before I actually launched it. That's when I got tunnel vision, but no vision at first, not at all. I was just absolutely winging it and having fun doing it.
Well, it's not like not having that vision didn't lead you anywhere. You had some releases on Zed's Deadbeats label.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say I basically, when I first started, I didn't have a vision, but then when I started to put out on these trap labels and stuff, I slowly realized, okay, maybe I could DJ and kind of tour and make some money off of it. But making music that finally got into like some cool labels, stuff like that, just made me want to completely swap genres, which is weird sounding, but I'm like thinking like, it basically didn't give me enough satisfaction in a weird way where I'm like, all right, if it got into some labels, I could make a different genre and be even better at it. Cause I almost got tired of it at that point when I started to release a lot of in 2018, I started to really get tired of trap music, but that definitely helped me segue into making house and being confident and then saving up these songs and then releasing the ABO project. But it definitely helped me get that confidence and to really be serious about it and then get tunnel vision for a while and actually put in the hours every week to make music. So yeah, it was definitely a confidence booster getting those, the label supports for sure.
Was there kind of a specific moment that catalyzed your transition to house music, or was it just, like you said, being kind of tired of the trap scene?
So I wasn't just making trap music. I was making like reggaeton stuff, Moomintone. And I found myself slowly getting fat higher up in BPM. So I started at 80, maybe 100 BPM stuff and like 110. It was a slow progression of getting higher up. And then I started making Catronata style, like Neo Soul, like 110 BPM. And then right when I started getting to 120, 125 BPM, that's when I just like did not get out of that BPM and that genre. But it was a slow evolution basically into house music. Nothing just made me just all of a sudden snap, I'm going to make house music. It was a slow progression of trying out different genres. And then I found myself being most comfortable at that 125 BPM house genre, basically. But I basically try to make every genre at one point and seeing what I was really good at. And I felt I was most comfortable with house. But yeah, it was like a 2-year progression of slowly going up in the BPMs, making, yeah, basically, I literally was 80 BPM trap and then 100 BPM. I was making like twerky style hip hop beats, then to reggaeton, Moomintone, Neo Soul, and then into house. I got 125. I tried to make all those genres.
And so we ended up here. So you've dabbled in a little bit of everything. What specifically about house and tech house really resonates with you in terms of its sound or the feeling?
I would say again, the bass line. The bass lines for me are just so addictive. And at first I didn't like house music because of how repetitive it was. But then being in a live setting and actually hearing it and feeling it and then being kind of like locked in on that perpetual groove that just never seems to stop but slowly evolves, which just got me so interested. And also with age, I feel like I got kind of more mature and wanted more sophisticated stuff and more simple stuff, as weird as it sounds. feel like house is more sophisticated genre than the other kind of electronic genres. No offense to other genres, but it, I don't know, something about a repeat, something repeating and slowly evolving, opening up almost like a beautiful flower at the end of it got me really into it. But the bass line being the anchor when it comes to house music is really what I've been addicted to. I'm addicted to a funky bass line. That's really all it is. And then adding vocals on top of it, it's the best genre ever.
Absolutely. I was reading one of your interviews, and the way that you described tech house specifically really stuck with me. You know, you talked about not just the darkness of it, but describing the feeling of it as being almost like a forbidden fruit.
Yeah. Chris like actually made me think about it in that kind of way, because his bass lines and a lot of his music is so dark sounding, and it doesn't seem to almost have a key where it's like very mysterious sounding, where it sounds a little off, but in person it sounds like a good evil. It's very strange. It's not like a happy bass line or like a sad bass line. It's like a forbidden fruit, because it's always sounding dark, and I really like those dark bass lines that kind of have a note structure where it feels like something bad's gonna happen, but in a really cool way. That makes any sense. But yeah, it's that like kind of dark feeling of a bass line groove that kind of makes me feel, it's almost like a forbidden fruit. This is too good to consume, because it doesn't sound fully right. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
it does. I mean, it really speaks to kind of the hedonistic quality of dance music in general.
Mm-hmm. It's dark.
So you kicked off this Able project by making a bunch of edits of artists like, you know, No Doubt, Eminem and Nate Dogg, Sierra, before building your original discography. Tell me about the process of finding your sound through those edits.
Those vocals definitely helped me get more of my style down to work with like something. It progressively, I feel like I started really funky, and then it progressively got a little darker, basically. But I would feel like R&B definitely helped kind of figure out my sound, and having that as like a template kind of vocal, because I was fully influenced by R&B and soul when I was getting to house. And then it just kind of slowly got darker and darker. And I realized Channel Tress is on a next level wave, and he has this dark tone to him, and it made me want to make darker, funky sounding bass lines. It slowly progressed into a soulful, funky, happy kind of bass line, and then slowly darker. But yeah, I still love soul music, and I'm still overdue for a really good soulful song. But it made me go darker and darker, basically, when I started putting more soul together. It's made me go darker.
What about in terms of vocals? Because like you said, your hip hop influences, I feel like they're still very evident even in the original vocals that you use now, with like your features like Arrow 808 and is it Prem?
Yeah, Prem. Yeah. Prem? Yeah, that's definitely my hip hop fluence coming out, because I've always wanted to kind of bridge rap and house music. People have done it before, but I really want to make my own style with a combination of hip hop and house. But yeah, that's like my Outkast influence from my dad and hearing a bunch of hip hop growing up. I still am in love with hip hop, and I always kind of try to find a way to bridge it together within my sound with like a dark funky style bass line, and having hip hop vocals. I feel like it's just a nice fresh take on house now, but people really need to combine more hip hop in house. It's not done enough.
I agree with you.
It's fun. It's fun to listen to, especially live too. If you have a really popular rap vocal live, it just hits so hard. I don't know what it is. And it's a house edit too. Oh man. I love it.
There's something very distinctly like Southern Californian about a hip house track.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Cause I feel like a lot of the hip hop songs I use too, and just have, are very kind of California style, West Coast kind of style with it, like the Snoop Dogg and Eminem is from Detroit, but yeah, there is that kind of underlying style of California hip hop in it. I can't really describe it, but there just is.
You know it when you hear it.
The words on it. Yeah. You basically know when you hear it. Maybe it's just like me giving off my California vibe. I don't know. I can't really put words onto it.
Fair enough. So your first single for Zed's Dead's Altered States imprint is GDB, an acronym which you've turned into a brand. So for the uninitiated, what is GDB?
GDB means goddamn baby. I basically kind of started as a joke because I got it from a dream I had of me just screaming goddamn baby on a mic at a big show. And it just stuck with me. And I just started saying GDB to all my friends. And anything good that would happen, I would just say GDB. Or if I don't know how to respond to a message, I just say GDB. Yeah, this is, yeah. It's an all positive connotation. And to me, it was an easy thing to replace and use fewer words. And then all my fans, when they see GDB, I respond with GDB as well. And it just seems to be this never ending cycle of positivity. As weird as it sounds, but yeah, it came out of the blue. I don't know why it stuck, but it just stuck and I started using it. And to me, it's just kind of funny. I don't know. And now I put it in some of my songs as a producer tag. And yeah, it's almost like a joke that just kept living on and never stopped because people just started saying GDB. So it's basically the story.
I saw one of your recent singles, Bass Glide, I think, was released on GDB Records. So does that mean it's now a record label?
Yeah, basically it's like my own label to self-release on, but eventually maybe a year from now, I want to open it up publicly and put out other people's music and turn it into a full-blown label. But I basically just kind of laid the foundation of it, but I'm just using it as a self-release for now, just for my own imprint. But that is the plan. That's good research. That's good research by you.
Yeah. So when it comes to production, what does your creative process look like?
Oh man, it's been more and more tough. It used to take me just a few days to make a song. I'd get the drums and then bass line idea, and then I put the vocals in. It's only a few day process. But now, like Hypnosis, that one took me 4 or 5 months of sitting on it and then just slowly tweaking it a few times a week. But I would say typically I make a full idea in about a week, and then I have to let it cook in the oven. That's what I call it, for at least like 2-3 months and test it out quite a bit. But it's a long process because I honestly keep myself to a higher and higher standard every time I put out music, where it's more and more tough for me to finish music because I always want to be better than my last song. But it's a long process, at least a few months process with making music, and then constantly beating myself over the song and making 20 different versions, and then finally landing on a version after 3 months. It's a long process.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So where do you actually make your music?
Right here in this room. And I don't make it anywhere else. I can't make music on a plane or on my laptop. I do it in my studio every time. But yeah, I've been making music in this room exactly for 4 years now, 3 years. And to me, this is the most comfortable room I ever made music in, and I make my best ideas here. So I can't really make music anywhere else. It's a weird thing. There's just like a special power with this room. I don't know.
So is it solely a studio space, or does it also bedroom?
It's my bedroom. Yeah, it's a small little bedroom it's a bedroom studio basically. But I enjoy bedroom studios. I feel like every time I go into like a legitimate studio, I kind of get nervous and kind of overthink everything versus being in my bedroom. Eventually I'll get a studio space, but like something about a bedroom studio space, it sounds really good in here. I'm more comfortable. But yeah, there's just something weird about being in a professional studio space for me, where I'm not as creative, not as open to making kind of anything, because I always feel like someone's going to be judging me on the other side. Maybe someone can hear on the other side of the studio wall. That's what I'm always thinking for some reason. But in my bedroom, I'm most comfortable. That just has the most creativity come out of me. Something weird about it. I don't know.
What do you, or who do you look for inspiration?
No one in particular right now. I just try to listen to as much music as possible from different genres and not house. Because I feel like if I listen to digging for a ton of house to find inspiration, I will almost like copy it too much unconsciously. So I try to listen to like Latin swing lately and very neo soul, jazzy house, piano house specifically. Those two genres I listen to a lot and I find a lot of inspiration from, even though they don't have a lot of similarities with the music I make. But to me, it just kind of helps open my brain up more, but I would say like opposite genres, like Latin swing. For some reason, Latin swing, I love that stuff. And I find a ton of inspiration from it, but no one in particular though. I just kind of dive deep in Spotify and let the algorithm kind of show me new music every time now.
Okay. So it seems like it's like, you know, kind of more abstract inspirations versus really zeroing in on specific details.
Yep. Definitely.
So let's talk about Hypnosis. How did you come up with the idea for that song?
So Arrow 808 actually sent me the full raw vocal and it was already called Hypnosis. So he had that hook already there. Right when I got the vocal the next day, I made that whole idea with the bass line, the whole song basically done, but missed that like 15% that took me 3 months to complete finish or 4 months to finish. But he helped me give me the idea because he had the full hook already. He didn't just write a vocal over a beat. He gave me that vocal and then I wrote a whole beat underneath it and had the idea of the saxophone because that's like the media idea came out right when I heard that vocal. But working that way, because I usually work that way where I hear the vocal and then I build the whole song underneath it, even though I feel like a lot of people make a beat and then they have vocals over it. That gives me the most inspiration. I usually will pump out an idea really quick just hearing a vocal, but it was Arrow 808 with the hook when it comes to the idea of Hypnosis. And then I felt like the sax and bass line just perfectly rhymed and complemented his vocal nicely. But I got to give him credit there. He came up with the whole idea and all the vocals and lyrics. He's a legend.
I mean, it's a big track. It's blown up on social media and on streaming. I think it has over a million Spotify streams as of
10 million now.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot. What about the song do you think resonates so powerfully with listeners?
I think it's the combination of Arrow 808's hook and then into the sax, because She Got Me to Hypnosis, that is already pretty catchy, and then the sax itself is catchy, and the vocal's so simple as well, and the sax, those two simple elements, I feel like is what captures people a lot. But I don't fully know. I just feel, I feel like the vocal and sax is probably the catchiest part. So somehow it resonated with people because I like the track. I didn't think it was going to blow up this hard at all, but I'm assuming it's the sax and vocal that really gets people. So it seems like it's definitely the sax too, for sure. Cause people would like hum it out live. But yeah, I think it's the sax and vocal, I guess. Something like that.
So getting officially remixed by Pitbull, Mr. 305, is a huge deal. First, tell me how that even happened.
It's pretty strange. I didn't even do much. So basically, one of Pitbull's producer, he made Timber and stuff like that. His name is Serm Style. He found me on SoundCloud like 2 years ago. We follow each other on Instagram. And then a few months after, probably 6 months after Hypnosis was out, he asked me, "Yo, can you send me the instrumental of Hypnosis? I'm going to see if Pitbull likes it." I sent it to him. And literally like the night of, he says, "Pitbull really likes it. He's already wrote a hook to it." Maybe it was the next day. It was within a day. He wrote a hook and everything. And then he sends the vocals in like a week later, like all the vocals. And then me and Serm Style worked on the arrangement of it when we got his vocals in his studio in LA. And then a few months later, the song was basically done. We had a good arrangement of it. And it came out, but it just seemed like it just naturally happened. I don't know. Yeah, he reached out to me and just within a day, he had like full hook and the whole idea and it was actually happening. Like, I didn't think it was going to be happening for a while, but it somehow happened. It's the strangest thing ever, but very grateful for that moment. I would never predict that to happen ever. I think it's just the saxophone. It like summoned him or something. It attracted him. But yeah, the whole thing was strange. I don't know how it happened. It just naturally happened, I guess. It's the universe speaking. I don't know.
What was your initial reaction to hearing his vocals on your track?
It was very surreal. Like it felt like I was in a dream, honestly, for a while. I just didn't think it was real. Like, this is actually happening. But then we're just like locked in trying to finish it, get the arrangement idea, went through like 20 different arrangements. It didn't really feel real until it was out, basically. Cause it just felt like a dream for a while, but it was very strange, very out of body experience. Cause I obviously used to listen to Pitbull growing up. I would play his music all the time at parties. I was a DJ. So it's very strange. It's weird. It's what I would put it as. It's very weird.
I mean, the guy, you could almost say he's a bit of a tastemaker when it comes to pop and dance. Like, we really have to give Mr. 305 his flowers for helping to commercialize dance music and
Oh,
EDM
yeah.
in like the late 2000s, early 2010s.
100%.
The fact that he's jumping on like your tech house track should hopefully, spur another, tech
There'll be
house
more tech house from him.
industry. Yeah,
I hope. I feel like I gotta have another collab with him. I need to send him another tech house beat, and we just gotta keep pushing tech house with him. That would be insane. But yeah, he influenced me a lot, and he really put dance music, at least in a pop sense, really on the map when it comes to all genres. He would do like not just house, but like a lot of reggaeton and Mubitone sound and stuff too. He's been so influential, so influential. And I still have some house edits I made of his vocals, like Go Girl and stuff like that. Man, that he's still got timeless bangers, bangers on bangers. That dude's still the GOAT, honestly.
absolutely. So, getting to your music videos, because from what I understand, cinematography has been another one of your passions from an early age. Tell
That was
me.
my first passion. I went to film school and everything, dropped out of it, and just completely sold all my film equipment for music. But yeah, cinematography and editing, stuff like that with my mom's camera as a young kid, that was like my first passion. I would make a bunch of videos to my friends. I've always wanted to be like a director or cinematographer growing up. And then I slowly got more and more of that passion in high school. And then when music and drumline started to conflict, I started to slowly go into house, and then eventually I sold all my equipment, all my film equipment for my studio and my speakers. And I just made the switch randomly. But yeah, I was into film for like 12 years as a kid throughout my life. And then I just swapped to house one day because film was making me go in debt. I was losing a lot of money doing it because it's hard. It's a hard industry to break. But and I just swapped to house one day. I swapped to making music. And now we're here. But what's nice is I had a lot of skills I learned from film, and I feel like I can edit well now, so I can market the way I want to market and do all these song rollouts the way I want to do them. Just with an iPhone, I feel like I could do a lot more than someone that doesn't know a lot of film skills and stuff like that. So that's what's nice about it. You kind of have that other skill set, and kind of like a director's mentality as well.
What kind of videos were you making as a kid?
Oh man, it honestly started as Call of Duty montages, like video game stuff, as like editing, kind of making cool little edits of my gameplay. And then it slowly got into music videos, basically, like these fake music videos where I would like lip them out. It was all over the place. And then I started getting to making short films into like middle school, high school. And then it was a combination of short films and music videos, basically, I was making. And then some narrative short films. But yeah, that's basically the two genres of films I would make. And I made one horror film. It was terrible. We'll never see the light of day. But that was the kind of films I was into, as well as skating videos. I love making skating videos and shooting my friends that knew how to skate very well. I love making those, but it was all over the place. Honestly, I didn't have a specific thing I was really into.
Okay, so it seems like your knack for making music videos preceded your actual music making. I'm curious, when you're sitting down to make a track, do you envision like a story, a scene, or a setting before you make a track, like to go off of?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when I initially make the idea, I'm just kind of locked in on getting the drums to sound right first, and then I kind of slowly envision what would this sound like and what would this look like live and how would people react to it live. And I kind of put an imaginary stage in my mind, and then literally visually and hearing it live, attempting to imagine that in my brain and trying to figure out a scene for it. And then as well as thinking of like visualizer music video style clips with it. And I'm kind of all thinking that as I make the song and then trying to tie together my music video idea for it. Cause there's a few songs where I have a specific idea and I kind of wrote it specifically for this visual vision as well. But yeah, I kind of make music like that. Like I try to think of it visually in an imaginary kind of way, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. So, do you find that you get to use your cinematography or visual skills when making your music videos like Hypnosis or Move Like This? Or do you feel like a lot of those things are often relegated to, like actual, like more professional cinematographers and producers?
So, the Hypnosis music video and Move Like This music video were other people that directed it and did the cinematography. But for Move Like This, I definitely talked through with my friend that's a director of what we're kind of going for, and then help kind of edit and stuff like that. So I definitely still have a hand in it, and we'll still definitely give them ideas of what shots I really want. But I'd rather leave up to the professionals because I have to do my part and perform, and it's so hard to like perform in a music video and direct it and see the shot at the same time. So you kind of have to pick one or other. I don't know how those directors like star in their own movie and direct it still. It doesn't make sense. Like, it's another level of multitasking. But GDB music video, and then most of the other rollouts and visualizers, I did all myself. And GDB was filmed by my friend, that music video, but I edited it all myself. But I usually will try to take a hold of the editing for most of it, and that's kind of my way to have a hand in it in a way. But I sometimes leave it up to professionals, basically. It's like half the time.
What about in terms of the creative?
As far like the creative vision of the whole thing, I did most of it, but Hypnosis, it was the boys at Feng Shui's idea for that one. And Move Like This was my friend Nolan's, and then I had some references I gave him as far as like shots I kind of wanted and cool scenes to do. But Drench, a lot of it was kind of like a half thing. It was me and Feng Shui. But I would say it's like 80%. Most ideas for all my rollouts are kind of me and my manager thinking of it, but it's not all me. It's basically like a communal effort, and then going back and forth with other creative people. And my manager is very creative himself too, so definitely get a lot of ideas from him. But I do like to have, I usually have a good stake in the creative direction as far as all the songs and the rollout, basically. But it's a communal effort. I got a good team now, so got a lot of creative ideas floating around.
You do, and I feel like you especially get to exercise those ideas on social media, particularly on TikTok. Social media has long been a very polarizing topic and part of the industry for artists and creatives. What's your take on using social media, and how do you use it to your advantage?
So social media now, since the TikTok algorithm was a thing, to me it's like the one of the best tools you can use, especially as an independent artist. And to me it's like a shortcut to get more exposure instead of signing it to a label and then them paying and investing a bunch of money. You might not even see that money for a long time because the amount of money they have to invest just to get it heard by a lot of people, it's a lot of money. And social media, and if someone blows up on TikTok, it's 100% free if it's done by your hands and experiencing it in live time too. It's the one of the best feelings ever because it's like, wow, people actually care about it. And it's just now it's the algorithm showing people that actually like it and actually care for it instead of paying that $10,000 to get it heard by a lot of people. It's one of the biggest tools and best tools you can use right now to get more ears on your project and exposure. But I only see it as a tool just to get more exposure. I try not to. I kind of took a break from it, and I kind of got too much into it because I'm always trying to blow up again. But I treat it as a tool and a very, very useful tool. But it's definitely good to take breaks on it because I got way too deep on TikTok for a while, where it was just like it took over my whole life. But it's one of the best tools out there to market yourself for free, and you can possibly get millions of views. And the more lottery tickets you get, the more TikToks you post, you have a better chance of hitting that lottery. It's worth it. It's worth trying it out at least.
I agree that there's definitely a very fine line in finding that balance. But I do have to say, I really enjoy how you kind of throw yourself into different characters across your different songs. Like, I think it was Move Like This, where your prompts were if the 1920s had house music or if the
Oh,
Great Gatsby.
that was New Dance. Yeah, I went
There we
full Great
go.
Gatsby vibes with it. Yeah. I
Yeah.
just try not to take myself too seriously, and I feel like people resonate with that a lot. But yeah, I love doing different characters. I feel like it's kind of like that Hollywood side of me. I've always wanted to play characters because I've always been behind the camera for so long, and now I feel like it's my time to play different characters and feel like I'm still a kid again, honestly. It makes me feel young by playing different characters. And it's just fun to do too, and hilarious.
Absolutely. What would you say your ultimate goal is as an artist and creative?
Man, it's a tough question. I want people to feel a positive energy and react to my music in a way where it kind of helps them have a better day. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I see a lot of people like, this song just made my day. Keep listening to it. That kind of feeling I get is the best thing ever. And that's why I keep making music, is because people really react to it and really like it. And it seems like it actually makes their day better, and they share it to friends and everyone's like, this is sick. And it's just kind of a positive energy that kind of has this ripple effect that I love. And I just kind of want to keep doing that and keep putting out music that people actually respond to or relate to, or just dance their heart out and makes their day better. But having a song making your day better, I think, is the best thing about making music. Cause I've had a lot of those songs where I heard it and I'm like, man, song's so good. And this just made my day 10 times better for some reason, because how powerful music could be. But yeah, that's what I would say my end goal is, to keep making people respond and have a positive influence on my music, I would say.
That's really lovely.
Thank you.
I think that's a really good note to end our interview portion on with Abo about his life and career thus far. So now we head into our speed round, where we get to know our subject on a lighter level. Abo, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First question, pool or jacuzzi?
Oof. Pool, when it's like 100 degrees out, because it can't do jacuzzi for pool.
If you were an animal, what would you be?
An owl.
An owl?
I want to be able to see in the dark, and I want to see like at laser vision level. Wait, don't they see? Yeah, they have insane eyes, right? Or maybe I'm thinking of a bald eagle. Bald eagle I meant. I meant bald eagle. I'll switch my answer right now. Bald, I want to see really far. I've always thought about having like a sniper style lens of an eye. That'd be dope. And I could fly anywhere too. Yeah, bald eagle.
That is pretty
sick. My final answer.
Yeah. Club or festival?
Club. Actually, yeah, club. I would say club. Easily. The vibe is a lot better. And usually the sound system is even better. And it's more intimate. I enjoy more intimate kind of atmospheres than a festival where the DJ is like 100 feet away on a big stage. Rather be face to face with the people and then the DJ as well. Club.
Favorite sport?
I'm not a big sports person, but I would say football and tennis. I like watching football. I don't like to play it a lot, but I play a lot of tennis.
Okay. You have a plane ticket to go anywhere in the world. Where do you go?
I've already been to Iceland, but I'd go to Iceland again, and New Zealand. It'd be Iceland first and then New Zealand second, but Iceland, because I only went there for 3-4 days, and it was easily the most beautiful place I've ever been to, and I've been so inspired from that trip since. So I would say Iceland, and take the full ring, the ring tour all the way around the island. That's what I want to do.
Okay. Favorite movie or TV show?
Oh man. I had like a top 10 list of movies, but I'd say the one I'm most influenced by right now, it's a lot of horror movies. I would say The Shining and 2001 Space Odyssey. And what's that other film that he made? 2001 Space Odyssey and The Shining, I would say, are my two favorite films. I don't watch a ton of TV shows. The last one I fully watched is Breaking Bad. So I would say Breaking Bad as far as TV shows. But yeah, I would say those. I'm very much inspired by horror.
So yeah, he, as you've mentioned before, you have the darkness in you.
I do.
Last album you listened to?
Full album. Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers by Kendrick. I haven't listened to a full album since then. And that's been like a year. I have a bad problem with getting through a whole album, but that was the last album I listened to. And that was the most inspired I felt in a very long time, listening to an album that had, it was a fantastic album. But yeah, that was the last album I listened to. And it was amazing. It helped me make New Dance in that piano style house. It was fully inspired by Kendrick and that album. And it's his use of piano for sure.
Right on. Dream collaborator from any genre, or live or dead?
Live or dead. I would say Kendrick Lamar. I'm already thinking about him. But yeah, I would say Kendrick. And I would make like a hip hop beat for him, not just house. It would be fully in his zone and his style and everything. That would be easily my dream collab. Yeah.
Right. Well, someone on your TikTok, you know, mentioned back when you made Hypnosis, Pitbull remix would be sick, and then it happened.
Yeah.
Let's look at this as a manifesting point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That is a crazy manifestation that actually happened, because I did see that comment. I was like, "There's no way that's going to happen," and somehow it did. I was able to respond to that person. It happened.
Well, when it happens, you know it happened here first.
Mm-hmm. We'll manifest it. I'll make sure it happens.
Okay. Well, that concludes our speed round and this interview. Abo, any last words or shout outs before we go?
Shout out Gray Area and Crystal for having me. I appreciate
Absolutely. And thank you. Thanks so much to the rest of you for joining us here on Gray Area. For more interviews like this, hit that subscribe button below. Until next time. Bye.